Good evening. It's good to see everyone this evening, and I appreciate you giving me this opportunity to speak to you about the work that was just concluded in the Philippines. First of all, I'd like to thank the congregation, both as a whole and individually, for the support that has been offered on my trips to the Philippines, both last year and this year, individually and as a congregation. I received support from Westside, and it means a great deal to me as you're able to help me to go over to the Philippines and preach the gospel there. I thank you very much. I thank you very much. This trip, Philippines 2012, I'm going to walk over this way, and I'm going to determine where the edge is, because I remember last time I almost walked off the edge over there, so I'm going to determine where the edge is now. 2012. This year, the trip to the Philippines started off quite differently in that the plans were changed about three or four times before we even got we even began our trip. Harry had sent me an itinerary of the trip, and we were supposed to remain mainly on the upper island here of Luzon. Well, that didn't work out, and then we were supposed to go down here into the Visayas. Well, that didn't work out, and so we ended up down here, the beginning of the trip down here on the island of Mindanao, and then going back up, reworking our plans, reworking our trip as we went along. And this is par for the course. Whenever you go on a trip like this, it is expected to have changes, and you have to be able to roll with the changes. And the major change that happened was because of a typhoon that went through the island of Mindanao. Now, if you're unfamiliar with the Philippines, typhoons are hurricanes, and typhoons usually hit here. Most often, they hit up here on Luzon. They never hit down here. We talk about, every once in a while, we'll talk about a 100-year storm that hits the area, and we'll have a 100-year floodplain. Okay, this storm that went through here is a never-before-happened storm. It's not going to happen ever again, once-in-a-lifetime type situation. Not even that. People cannot remember the last time that a typhoon hit the island of Mindanao. And this typhoon, it came from west to east, and it went across the upper part of the island. The cities of Cagayan de Oro and Iligan were two of the major cities that were hit. And these were the two cities that we went to at the beginning of our trip to the Philippines. We received, both Harry and I received benevolent funds from individuals and from congregations all around the United States. And we took these funds with us to give to the Filipino brethren so that they might have relief from the situation that they were under. Now, I don't know if you've ever been in a natural disaster. I never have been. I've only seen pictures of it. Now I've seen real life events of it, and it's quite a different situation. It is. I've been through earthquakes when I was living out in California. I've been through earthquakes. Never really saw any of the devastation. Here, I actually got to see a lot of the devastation. This river here flowed well over its banks and wiped out just everything that was in its path. Back here, you can see the remnants of a bridge that is no longer there because of the flooding that happened. When we first landed in Cagayan de Oro on the island of Mindanao, Brother Cipriano Carpintero Jr. picked us up at the airport, and he drove us back to the hotel. And on the way to the hotel, we went by various spots, and he showed us various areas of where the flooding hit, and spoke to us of the many homes and the people that were lost. Here along this river, this river here, there were hundreds and hundreds of homes. We're talking 300 to 500 homes here. And again, if you remember from last year, we're not talking about homes that you and I would talk about as being a home. Their homes are the most rudimentary of structures. They don't have to provide any real shelter from the cold. It's a shelter from the ever-present sun, and the sun beats down just tremendously on you while you are there. But all of these homes, we're talking plywood, and we're talking some cement, some haydite block, half haydite block. We're talking 2x4s, tin roofs. We're very rudimentary homes.
300 to 500 of them are just washed away at this river here. This river, this part of the river here, was probably about 50 yards wide. At the time of the flood, it was 300 yards wide as the water is coming down out of the mountains. This is not even a once in a lifetime. It's a one time. This has never happened ever before. It hit, the floods hit in the early morning hours. About 1:30 in the morning is when these floods hit. And you're talking about a situation where people were not ready. They were not prepared. A typhoon's coming. Oh yeah, a typhoon's coming. Typhoons never hit Mindanao. A typhoon's coming. Oh, typhoon's coming. We're not too worried about it. They did not know and understand the ramifications of a typhoon coming. And many lives were lost. Great devastation. Great destruction. Over here in this picture here, I'm standing about 3 feet above the road here. I'm 6'2". And then you see that line right there? That's the water line. 300 yards across, that's the water line. See this woman right here? We got there on Tuesday or Wednesday we got there. I think it was a Wednesday we got there. The very next day, her daughter would have turned 6 years old. She's a Christian. She saw Cipriano Jr. She saw him and she came over and was talking to us. She lost her daughter in the flood, swept away in the flood. And so many people had relatives just swept away in the flood. In Cagayan de Oro and in Iligan, there were two mass grave sites where the bodies were beyond recognition. They couldn't do anything with them, so they just buried them in these mass grave sites, one in Iligan and one in Cagayan de Oro. People were just washed away. Here, the rebuilding of some of the homes here, and this would constitute a home. You see back here, these people are waiting in line for the relief that was provided by the government. There were all kinds of charities who were providing relief, various UN charities, Red Cross, Catholic charities. Many groups were there providing. Providing the assistance that people needed, and here a long line that people are waiting in. And you see, this is all brand new construction, and these are brand new homes. This is where people will be living in the future as they continue on with their lives here in this area. This area here, I have pictures that June took earlier when he went and did visit the devastation before we got there, and I have pictures where all of this is still underwater. People are trudging through water. We're about 35 feet up on a bridge here, and all of this was buried underwater as you're going along. Again, we see another bridge that's been washed away here, and the debris and the results of the devastation, the flood as it went through. We first went to the Santiago Church of Christ in Iligan. Edgar Samadal. His father preaches there. Edgar lives there. Edgar preaches both there and up in the mountains. And this is a pile of debris. This is songbooks, workbooks, Bibles, all kinds of Bible class material, all kinds of church material that was just swept away and was useless. All of Edgar's communication equipment, all of the sound system, and they use sound systems, but they have them all as a portable type system. All his computer, everything was gone. His vehicle was flooded, and he sent it up next to a tree, and the water was that deep. And let me see, Edgar's about this tall, so we're talking water about this deep here throughout the whole area as the water rushed through and just wiped out the church there. We're at the church in Iligan, and this was kind of a depot where the needed support, the provisions were sent out from the church in Iligan. There were about 9 churches around the city of Iligan that had Christians, 9 congregations around in that area. And over in Cagayan de Oro, there were only 2 congregations. And so Iligan was chosen as a focal point where the goods were shipped in, sent there, and then they could be distributed out and sent out from there. This is Fred Samadal, Edgar Samadal, Cipriano Carpintero Jr., and Jonathan Carreño. Jonathan Carreño, he lives up on the island of Cebu. He lives in Cebu City. And Jonathan has a business background. And Edgar and June were not, they had no idea what to do or how to do what needed to be done as far as distributing and getting the help that people needed. Jonathan, with his business background, he volunteered to come down and help, and he has spent numerous hours traveling between the island of Cebu and down to the island of Mindanao, and he's still doing that even to this day, as he's continued to help with the rebuilding of homes that were needed. But he laid out a plan, he laid out an action plan, so that all of the help could be sent to the people who needed the help. Everybody would be covered with what they needed. And it was very orderly and very, very proper in all of its actions. And I highly commend Jonathan for his work, his timeliness in his work, the method in which he did. He did his work and he helped out the brethren there greatly. And Edgar and June were also greatly instrumental in determining what was needed and where it was needed and who needed what and how do we get there to them. There were grocery sacks that were available to all the people who needed them. These are 25 kilo bags of rice, and those who needed it, everybody got bags of rice. If you needed pots and pans, and you needed blankets or mosquito nets or water bottles, if you needed all of these things were provided. Lists were made so that we know, okay, this is your family, what do you need? This is your family, what do you need? And everybody was given these lists, everybody reported in so they knew how much to buy, where everything was going, where all the goods were going. And there was a price list. And so we knew exactly how much was being spent. Jonathan spent a lot of time and effort as he made it very proper and very orderly in the distribution of all of the aid and the benevolence that was sent over there. I don't know how familiar you are with the Philippines. I don't know if you have any contact with the Philippines. There's one man who was griping. One man who was griping. He said that the distribution was improper. He said that the distribution, and he was using a surrogate to do his complaining for him. He wouldn't complain himself, but he said, okay, here's what I want you to say, here's what I want you to do, and his surrogate sent out all the complaining. What this man wanted, it wasn't good enough that rice was bought for everybody. It wasn't good enough that groceries were bought for everybody. It wasn't good enough that those who didn't have pots and pans, now they had pots and pans. There was an aid group who went down through the area, and they bought up every pot and pan that was available all throughout the area so that there were no pots and pans available. So what do you do? Well, Jonathan was able to find where pots and pans could be available and got them to the people so they could have something to cook in. Good thing. What this man wanted, one man, what he wanted, he didn't want people to have the rice. He didn't want people to have the water bottles. He didn't want people to have the groceries. He wanted to say, okay, give me all the pesos. And, okay, how many pesos do you need? Okay, here, I'll give you your pesos. How many pesos do you need? Okay, I'll give you your pesos. He wanted to be in charge of everything. Well, my only thought is, if we go back here, and we look here at water, pots and pans weren't available. So, okay, I need pots and pans. Okay, let me see, pots and pans. That'll be about 100 pesos. So here's 100 pesos. Go buy pots and pans. Where am I going to buy pots and pans? Aren't any pots and pans available? Well, you have money for it now, so go buy it. Water, this water here, about 5 liters of water had gone up from 60 pesos to 100 pesos. There was no rice available in the area. Where are you going to buy these things? Where are you going to get these things? Oh, I've got the money now, but where are the provisions going to come from? The proper, a good and proper method is to provide the people with what they needed. And in my opinion, I was there, I saw these things. If you hear anything different, I would greatly dispute any disparaging comments, any disparaging remarks about the distribution and the way it was handled. I thought and I saw that it was handled very properly and in accordance, I think, with the scriptures. The saints received the benevolence, their needs at that time. And Jonathan has continued to do this as he has helped people rebuild their houses. rebuild a place for them to call home once again. And the benevolence that was sent from the United States has gone to its proper use and to its proper function there in the Philippines. One other thing, I mentioned the Catholic Charities. The Filipino government places a lot of stock in the Catholic Charities. And the Filipino government gives the Catholic Charities many, many pesos. Here, millions and millions of pesos. You take care of the benevolence. You take care. You help those flood victims out. Well, the Catholic Charities got out there, and this did happen. I confirmed it with both Edgar and June. It did happen. Catholic Charities got out there, and they said, okay, who all needs rice here? And everybody raises their hand. Okay, now they would all get in line. Okay, now, what religion are you? You're Catholic? Okay, you go right over there, and you're bagging rice right over there. Okay, what religion are you? You're Church of Christ? Okay, your line is right over there. And they got nothing. They got nothing. And that happened time and time and time and time again. If you were Catholic, you got something. If you were not Catholic, you got nothing. This is the love and the exhibition of great love from the Catholic organization. Shameful. Shameful. Thankfully, there were Christians who sent benevolence from the United States and even from all around the Philippines. They sent aid to the brethren there in Cagayan de Oro and Iligan and helped them with what they needed. They needed rice. They needed pots and pans. They needed blankets, mosquito netting. All the pesos in the world wouldn't have done them any good. They needed the goods that would help them survive day to day. And that is what they received. We went back. One of the places that we went to outside of Iligan was Mandalag. And Mandalag is about an hour and a half drive out of the city. And you're in the jungle. I was waiting for some war movie to break out. We were way out there. And we got off the paved road and got onto a dirt road that went up over the mountain and down the other side. And you know, I have no idea where we are, obviously, but we were just so far back up in the mountains and back in the jungle area. And we're on the street here. I'm standing up on the street. Edgar's already gone down. You're looking. You're talking about a 15-foot slope off down here. And this is the new church building that's being built in Mandalag, where we put all the benevolent aid here in front so we can take a picture with the congregation. You see some of the Haydock blocks as they're rebuilding their building. Jonathan describes and tells everybody what's going to happen, how the distribution is going to go. Everybody receives paperwork. Everybody fills out the paperwork. So we know that everybody was accounted for. No one was missed. No one was skipped. No one was omitted. That everyone received exactly what they needed. There were two types of benevolent aid that were going, well, really three types. If you had your house washed out, then you also would receive, they were also having funds for rebuilding of a home. But generally, it was a bag of rice, 25 kilos of rice, and a grocery bag of small grocery items that you could use every day. Or if you had a washout, you received these extra items, the pots and pans, the tubs, the water bucket. Mosquito netting, blankets, things like that. And so you would have two different types. And one, we have a young man here receiving his grocery bag and then his 25 kilos of rice there. And everyone was extremely happy. They were grateful to receive the benevolent aid. They were grateful to receive the rice. Rice is a staple. We talk about bread and butter here. You're talking about rice there. In every meal, you're going to have rice. Breakfast, you're having rice. Lunch, you're having rice. Dinner, you're having rice. If you want a snack, I've got some rice for you. You're having rice with everything. And that's just the way it is. That is their main food group. And so everyone was extremely happy. They were extremely pleased. This is the church building in Mandalag. This is the new building that's being built. That's the old building. Now, this is very unusual to see a lot of concrete here. This is the dirt floor in between here, but there's a lot of concrete here all around. The new building is Haydock blocks, and the Haydock blocks are only the half wide Haydock blocks. The tinfoil roof. The tinfoil roof. You know what it's like? It's if you took a Coke can, and you cut the Coke can out, and you corrugated it. That's their corrugated tin roofs. You can step on it, and it'll crinkle. It's that soft. That's their corrugated tin roofs. This is the church building. Obviously, it's outside. Obviously, there are no walls. There's only a roof. They will not build it any higher than this right here. Generally, especially out here in the jungle area, you will not see anything higher than this right here. If it goes higher, it may be some wood walls with some windows in it, but you wouldn't want to be there in the heat of summer. You wouldn't want to be there at all. There was enough humidity going on this day alone that I can just imagine what it would be like in the summertime when the heat really picks up, when the heat really gets going. The preacher's home and the church building were wiped out. This is what's left of some of the debris and then the sign for the Church of Christ there in Mandalog. This whole area was just devastated as the flood rolled in. These people live off of the banana trees that are there in the area, and the coconut trees and the banana trees were just completely gone. They were wiped out, and they were waiting for the banana trees to regrow so that they could harvest the bananas and sell them and carry on like that. We went back to the Santiago Church of Christ in Iligan. This was the main hub where all the distribution was going on, and the congregation here at Santiago. They were very pleased and very happy to receive the benevolence. It was quite welcome to them. Just another picture of the river here, one of the other rivers that was flooded. On this side of the river, one home was gone, and you can see a little bit of what a home looks like over there. One home was flooded. This was on the downstream side of the river. The upstream side of the river over here, this is where three homes were wiped out. Three homes were gone. All that's left here is just the corrugated tin roof. You see the superstructure of the bridge itself is greatly deteriorated. These are huge, huge blocks. We're talking like 8 to 10 feet long here, and we're talking at least 3 or 4 feet wide. And there's another piece here. This was directly below the bridge. That's the power of this water that was rushing through. I have never experienced anything like this before, so it was a learning experience in many different ways for me. We went back to, we were only able to go to one church in the Iligan area, the Mandalog Church of Christ. Then we went back to Cagayan de Oro the next day. And in Cagayan de Oro, there was the San Simeon Church of Christ that we went to. And they meet outside. This is the building where they meet, but they've outgrown that, so they meet out back. They put up a tarp in the back, and that's where they meet. Elders, I've got a great way to solve our air conditioning problem. From now on, hopefully this will never happen again, but if the air conditioners get stolen, I just put up a big tarp out here, and you can, who's in for it? It's the way it is every day. Every day. We have it so comfortable. Stan remembers, I'm sure, his time in India. We have it so comfortable here. We need to remember all of the wonderful blessings that we have here in the United States. It just amazes me. It's a big culture shock as you go over to places such as the Philippines and you see how they live and how they worship, how they conduct their lives each and every day. And you realize, and you go back and you realize how blessed we are here in the United States and how much we take it for granted. And we didn't. I'm right there with you. I take it for granted. What would happen if we lost all of these things? As we're here, and I'm witnessing the distribution that's going on. Many times they would ask me to get in the pictures or do this or do that, and I said no. It's not about me. It's about the distribution. It's about the saints receiving the benevolent aid that they need. But they love to take pictures over there. But it's all about the work that's going on. It's all about the benevolent aid that has been sent, the care and love and concern for fellow Christians. And you see that. You truly saw that as the distribution was going on. We went back to the Cagayan de Oro Church of Christ in the afternoon. And here, you have to walk down a path about 100 yards long. And this path is just stones here. And there's mud all along the path. And you're stepping on a stone, and it'll flop this way. And then you step on it, and then it'll flop that way. And there's water and mud. There's a cow out here grazing in this field out here beside. You're walking along about 100 yards. and you come to the building here, here's the building, and then just inside the building here, and you just various pictures. Kids were running around. It was wonderful. It was really neat because the kids were running around, and they were laughing and playing and just cutting up as kids will do. And it can't get any better than that. When last Sunday night, I was down at the I-35 church in Alvarado, and one of the men there, his grandkids were cutting up during the sermon, during the report, as I was making the report. And I told him, I said, don't ever worry about that. I'll fight over that any day. That's the best sound that anybody could hear, that any Christian could hear, is children in the church building. That means that parents are bringing them to the services. Parents are concerned about their soul, that they're teaching them, striving to teach them the gospel of Jesus Christ. And I don't know about Stan or what's his name over there, Dennis, I don't know. But I'll fight over that. I'll fight over that noise any day. That's the best noise that a preacher, as far as I'm concerned, could hear, is children in the congregation. Now, I'm not encouraging them to yell. I'm not encouraging them to cut up. But that's a wonderful sound. And I saw that here, especially here at the Caguian de Oro Church of Christ there in Caguian de Oro City. Manila here, we went down to Caguian de Oro, Iligan. And then from here, we flew back to Cebu. Oh, I forgot to tell you. We got into Caguian de Oro. We flew into Manila on Monday. It was really Tuesday because we lose a day. Got to Caguian de Oro Tuesday night. Harry and I went to have pizza at Yellow Cab Pizza. We get it half and half. He gets his meat pizza and I get my my Hawaiian pizza. He takes his half of his pizza and he puts some sauce on it. And that was the last I saw of Harry for 3 days. He got so sick. He had to go to the hospital. He had to go to the hospital and have an IV. All of these first 2-3 days here, I'm by myself, and this is my second trip to the Philippines. And so let's go, guys. Let's go see what happens. But Harry was so sick. He had to go to the. He ended up having to go to the hospital there in Caguian de Oro. At the end of the lesson, I'll show you a picture of the doctor that he was talking to over the phone, and she encouraged him to go and get an IV. We spent about 3 hours in the hospital. He had an IV fluid with ringers or whatever they call it, a full bag stuck in him, and we waited there for 3 hours for the whole bag to drain, and he was getting antsy. We got the bill. Okay, 3 hours in the emergency room with IV bag. How much do you think it was here? I mean, maybe $1,000, maybe even as much as $1,000. It was 800 pesos, about 20 bucks. Shock. But Harry got better, and for the remainder of the trip, Harry was feeling much better. We were extremely cautious, and he was more cautious than he usually is about eating food. And he would caution me all the time, no, you can't eat that, you can't eat that, you can't eat that. But I'm thankful that Harry kept me healthy again on this trip. We went back to Cebu City. We flew back from Caguian de Oro to Cebu City. And we met with the brethren there in Cebu City. This is just a picture from the hotel room as we're looking out the window at some of the houses around there. We met with the brethren where Jonathan Carino, this is Jonathan here, this is his wife Nanette. I believe that's his daughter there. When we met with them on that Sunday morning, we met and worshiped with them. We got to preach there in Cebu, and then we would head out. This is Jack and Fred, two preachers in the area. From there, we headed over to Tacloban on the island of Leyte. We landed in Tacloban on the island of Leyte, and Harry said, "Oh, this is where MacArthur came back." I said, "Oh, really?" He said, "Yeah, this is where MacArthur landed when he was when he returned to the Philippines." And they have this big monument here where MacArthur landed out from the Philippines. This is the Pacific Ocean out here, and this building right here is the Hotel Alejandro. The hotel is all around it. This was MacArthur's headquarters. This is where we stayed in the Hotel Alejandro. And this building in front was where where MacArthur was headquartered while he was in the Philippines. If you're a World War II buff, you could spend hours and hours just in that building. There's just memorabilia everywhere. And you could just spend and you could just read and then And it's truly inspiring as you read about all the things that happened during World War II. That's where the earthquake happened when I was in the Philippines. That's when the earthquake happened this time. It was a 5.9 earthquake. We were here in Tacloban. We preached here in Tacloban. Here's the Bible. Here's the flyer that went out. We preached up here. We were supposed to preach in a Pentecostal church. Harriet accepted an invitation from a pastora. That's a female pastor. From a pastora, and she invited us to preach in her Pentecostal church while we were there. And, it didn't happen. The reason why it didn't happen is because she obeyed the gospel between time A and time B. We're very thankful that she was obedient to the gospel. And so we preached in this rented room here, but what she did was instrumental in getting as many people as possible. Her and her husband were instrumental in getting as many people as possible to come and hear the gospel in Tacloban. And we had good large crowds both days. First day over 65, 68, somewhere around in there. Next day 79, somewhere around in there. Large crowds. The room was full and very attentive. People were very attentive. Jonathan would do some translating. This is Jonathan Carino. He would do some translating into the local dialect. This is Manny. Manny Epilog and Nilo, they both live in the Tacloban area. They're both Christians. Manny and his wife, they were the ones who obeyed the gospel. His wife is the pastora. They obeyed the gospel. And they were instrumental in putting together the meetings, the lectures here in Tacloban. These people were baptized. You're looking, Nilo and his family, Manny and his family, and these people who were baptized, here's Manny right here, you're looking at the congregation, the Church of Christ in Tacloban. There was never a Church of Christ in Tacloban before. Now there is. Harry was saying that of all the work that he's done in the Philippines, this is one of the most rewarding, because now there's a church where there wasn't one before. That doesn't disregard any of the other work that's ever been done in the Philippines. But what that says is that there's power in the gospel of Jesus Christ. If we will go and preach and teach the gospel of Jesus Christ, there will be some who hear. Now, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9 who obeyed the gospel. 10 with Manny. 11 with Nilo and their families. 15. 17. Out of 100 or 125 who were there, 17 are now part of the gospel of Jesus, part of the body of Jesus Christ, preaching, teaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's not everybody. It'll never be everybody. But the gospel of Jesus Christ reaches the hearts of those who want to be obedient to Jesus, want to serve Him, want to be right with God, and they will respond, and these did. Please keep these brethren in Tacloban on the island of Leyte in the Philippines. Please keep them in your prayers as they strive for the gospel of Jesus Christ in an area where there has been no church before. Wonderful, wonderful work that was done. From Tacloban, that's where there was a 5.9 earthquake while we were there. I texted Linda and Leska and Haley all the same text. I said, "Did you hear the one about the preacher who was caught in an earthquake? Dot, dot, dot." And if you remember, I was caught in the earthquake that was in earthquake and tsunami that was in Tokyo last year. So Linda texted me back. She said, "Don't tell me this. You know you're killing me," or words to that effect. It wasn't a big one. It was only a 5.9. We waited outside of the hotel for a few minutes, and then we carried on. Not too terribly bad. We went from Tacloban. We went back up to Manila, and from Manila we headed up back up. We headed back up to this part of the island of Luzon. We went up to the city of Tagigarao. That's where Rody Gumpod preaches. Rody and his wife Tessie, tell you what, they're wonderful, wonderful people. They're workers in the gospel, in the kingdom. They're workers for the gospel of Jesus Christ. Rody has a preacher training program that he conducts from time to time with and without the brethren from the United States. He has a radio show. He has a TV show. His sons and his sons-in-law. They spread out and they preach and teach the gospel on Sunday afternoons. Wonderful, wonderful people. Workers for the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's always good to see Rhody and Tessie. We went up to Tegigerau, and we, from Tegigerau, we took this road here. We came out of the city of Tegigerau, came down here, and went over to the area of Tobruk over here. And this is about a 2-hour drive over two mountain ranges, and finally we end up in the city of Tobruk. We're following behind here as they're loaded on the jeepney as they're driving up through the roads, just various travel in the Philippines. We went to where Ben Bistro preaches. If you remember Ben from last year, Ben was one of the men who said, can you help me get some money for some men who need to buy some horses so they can travel from congregation to congregation to preach on Sunday? This is one of the horses that was bought. Ben showed me this picture. He showed me the paperwork for both of the horses. This is one of the horses that was bought for a preacher so that he could travel by horseback on Sunday to the three congregations. I told you last year, I said I wasn't sure if Ben was talking about needing one horse or needing two horses. Well, he actually needed two horses, and this is one of them that was bought. This horse here, full-grown Filipino horse, this tall, about this wide. They're just tiny little things. But I know. Stan, I'm not going to include myself in this. Stan and Dennis, we'll get you a horse from now on, and you can ride a horse. I'm not going to include myself in this. Dennis is already shaking his head like this. That's how they preach on Sundays. They travel by horseback from village to village on Sundays and preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. If that's what it takes, would we be willing to do it? I guarantee you, Stan's laughing and Dennis is shaking his head. I guarantee you, if that's what it took, then that's what would happen. But this is the way of life. Before they were walking, now they're riding horseback. And it's due, in large part, to the generosity of so many of the members here at the Westside Church of Christ in Fort Worth. Due to your generosity, these men are riding horses now, preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. Ben is a tireless worker. Not a very good picture of Ben. And I still can't remember his name. Man. Ben is a tireless worker in the Tobruk area. Just a wonderful, wonderful preacher. A tireless worker. He set up this lecture series. This hall is about 100 feet, 125 feet long. It's huge, and it's filled front to back. 1, 2, 3 tables, double-sided filled front to back. Just a large amount of brethren who were there. Harry's preaching here. Just a picture with Ben here. They gave us these necklaces. What they did is they saw that there were very, very important people coming to speak to them, and so they gave us this high honor of this wonderful necklace to wear, because we're so very important people. Just a tribal thing, that's what they did. This is, you're in a tribal area, and that's all it is. It's just a tribal thing where they honor you with something, so you graciously accept it, and you go on. June Goompod, Rhody's son, was doing some of the Bible reading, some of the translating that was done here in the area, and there were four to be baptized here in Tobruk. I didn't really get to see the last trip to the Philippines. I did not get to see any baptisms or really any response to the gospel. Here we got to see some response to the gospel, and I actually got to witness some baptisms, and I'll show you that in just a minute or two. We went out to the area of the Barayacan Church of Christ. This is about an hour outside, 45 minutes to an hour outside of Tobruk. You're back in the jungle areas. You're back away from civilization. This is some of the homes in the area back here. I had to get a picture of all the kids as the kids were they were kind of shy. And you have to encourage them just a little bit, just about that much to get their picture taken, and then their hands, and they want many pictures taken. Here's the church building at Barayacan. Again, outside, no walls. You have a wall back here. And that's where the whiteboard is. We had to do some whiteboard preaching. And that's not one of my fortes. I don't do whiteboard preaching. I can't write and talk at the same time. I have a hard enough time talking at the same time I'm talking. Now you want me to write while I'm talking? I have a hard enough time with that. But we did some preaching here. Ben is here, and the people here present, they filled up the pews. They were over here on the side. They were over here on the side. They were in the back as the gospel was being preached. Rhody, what would happen is Harry gave his lesson. I gave my lesson. And Rhody would summarize both of them in the local dialect. And this is very difficult for Rhody. This speaks a lot of Rhody as he listens. Okay, Brad, what I want you to listen to what Dennis has to say, and I want you to listen to Stan has to say. And then I want you to translate it into the local dialect. And that's what Rhody did. Now, having first heard these, probably this time, and he translates them. That's the one of the strengths of Rhody as he gives himself over to the gospel of Jesus Christ. And then Rhody presented his own lesson in the local dialect himself. Four more were to be baptized at Barikon, and by the time we got down to the river, two more came forward and they wanted to be baptized also. This is, again, looking back up, here's the church building. This is a pig sty right here. This huge, huge pig. I mean, she was probably this long. And she was huge. That's her home right there. We're back up in the jungle here. We go back into Tabuk City itself, to the Central Church of Christ, and we're preaching again here. Harry is preaching. We got a picture of Harry here preaching, and Rhody's giving the summarization. Kenneth E. from here, he preaches here at this local congregation. Four more were to be baptized here. After Tabuk, we spent 2 days up in the Tabuk area, and then we came back to the Metro Church of Christ in Tegirgarao, where Rhody preaches, Rhody and his family. And just a picture of all those who were present. Generally, what will happen in Tegirgarao, people will come from all over the area. You're talking 60, 70, 80, 90, 100 kilometers away. They will come all around, and they'll participate. They'll be present at the gospel meetings that are going on, the gospel lectures that are going on. One was baptized here. Ken was one who actually did the baptizing here. One was baptized here in Tegirgarao. They have a built-in baptistry back here. This is a two-story building that they have here. From Tegirgarao, we went to Tabuk first, and then we went back over here to Tegirgarao. We stayed here a day or two, and then we took this road right here, all the way up over the top of Luzon, over here to Loag. This is about a six and a half hour trip, even with Rhody driving. Rhody is a very fast and furious driver. Harry always says that Jehu's got a new chariot, and he's talking about Rhody. Rhody had a new chariot, brand new vehicle, and so it wasn't quite as fast as it used to be, but because he wants to take care of it a little bit, it's a nicer one. But it's still pretty fast. And so about a 6.5 hour trip all the way up over as we came over here to Loag. And in Loag for 4 days was our hub. We went out to various areas in Loag for the next 4 days and used it as the hub of our journeys. We first traveled to the Marcos area, and the Marcos area is named after Ferdinand Marcos. That's where his body is still in state here. And they were telling me we didn't go by, thankfully. They say that you can still go by and look at his body, corpse. It's in a glass casket, and it's still sitting there, even to this day. And thankfully, we didn't go over there and take a look at this. I don't know that I would want to see the state of Marcos at this particular time. We went to the Escoda Church of Christ. Oh, one interesting thing about this area. You see this, all this, the Ilocos area? One interesting thing. The number one religious group in that area. Can you think of what it would be? The number one religious group in the Ilocos area. Now remember, Catholicism is really big in the Philippines. Mormons are making a big strong stand over there. There's another group called Iglesia de Cristo. It's a Philippine religious body that's been started over there in 1914. The number one religious group here in the Ilocos area, you know what it is? It's the church. You'll find more Christians in the Ilocos area than you will any other group. They outnumber denominations. They outnumber everybody. You know why?
Because they got out and worked. They got out and did their job. Taught the gospel of Jesus Christ. We started off here in Escoda. Escoda is one of the largest congregations. It's a huge building. It rivals this one. It's a huge building. We had people sitting inside. We had people sitting out on the side. We had people sitting out front. All over to hear the gospel preached. They came from all over to hear the gospel preached. And the members were present. We're talking of a congregation that's probably over 200 strong. Hearing the gospel preached. These came forward to be baptized. This man right here is Matt Sabayan Sr. He and another man by the name of Vic Domingo are instrumental, have been instrumental in spreading the gospel of Jesus Christ in the Ilocos area. They have been preachers for many, many years, and they have been very instrumental in spreading the gospel and teaching others and encouraging others to be obedient. They and their families have done great work in this area. They are to be commended for their stand for the truth, and they make a stand for the truth. And we ought to do the very same thing. Simply stand for the truth. Here, I actually got to see some baptisms here, and we went out to the local river here. And what happens, there are no baptistry clothes, first of all. You're baptized in what you're wearing, so if you're going to come forward, be sure you're ready to get wet. And what happens is, the men, there's several men who will do the baptizing. The men will get down in the water, and they'll walk around in the water, and they'll walk around, and okay, I got water this deep. Okay, everybody come over here, we're going to baptize right here. And they'll find a deep enough spot to baptize in. And what you do is they say, okay, sit down. And so you sit down on the bottom of the river, on the riverbed there, and that's the position that you're going to take being baptized. That's what they're doing here. They're sitting down. Now, this lady right here did not want to be baptized. They would start to put her down, and she would jerk her head back up, and she did not want to go under the water. They would get her head down and her feet would come up. And so they struggled with her getting her baptized a couple of times. This man right here, he had the best method of baptizing. He had it down to a science. He would get down and he would say what he's going to say. He would have his hand over their mouth and their hands on his, you know, like kind of like what we do. Then what he would do, and you could see it very well, he would take his foot and he would step on their legs and then put them under the water. And it was just, I was just like, perfect. The feet aren't going to rise up. We're going to get a baptism here. And he had it down. He had it down to a science. He baptized this end down here, and it was just boom. And I guess you learn these. If you don't have a baptistry, I guess you learn these little techniques, these little ways to make sure that there is a burial as it's supposed to be. It's wonderful to see the gospel, the power of the gospel in action, as people are obedient to the gospel of Jesus Christ, as they're baptized into Jesus Christ for the forgiveness of their sins, as they're added to His body, as they're added, as they're translated, they're conveyed into the kingdom of the Son of His love. It's a wonderful thing to see the power of the gospel. If we preach the gospel of Jesus Christ, there will be those who will respond to its call. We're preaching in Bumatog, in the same area. In the morning we preached in Escoda, in the afternoon we preached in Bumatog Church of Christ. Our translators were Matt Sabayan Sr. and Hill Kandek right here. Matt and Hill, they were, there was one more man who was a translator for us, and these three passed off the duties. And I don't know if you've ever had to speak through a translator, but it's a very, very difficult thing, because this is the way it goes. Hi, it's very good to see you today. I'm so pleased to be here. In the dialect, hi, so very good to be here today. So pleased to be here. The point is, you can say a sentence or two, and then they have to say a sentence or two. And you say a sentence or two, and then they have to say a sentence or two. Again, I have enough trouble keeping a train of thought while I'm speaking. Now I have to keep a train of thought while they're speaking, while I'm waiting for them to finish. And what would happen is I would find myself doing this as he's translating.
I would find myself doing this. Because I'm thinking of the words that I want to say next, and I'm practicing them to make sure that they come out right. Because you have to speak in very concise sentences, in a very concise pattern, so that it can be translated, so that the idea can be given to those who are listening. Because not all of our words that we say are translatable into the local dialect. And so you have to be very careful. And so this manner of preaching for the next 4 days was interesting, to say the least, as we're working back and forth between the speaker and the translator going back and forth. At Bumatog, two congregations came together, the church where Matt Sabine preaches, Matt Sabine Jr. preaches, and where Hill preaches. This is the church in Bumatog where Hill actually preaches. And the congregation where Matt preaches, they came over. They worked together on this. And what we have here is we have a tarp out front. Here's the tarp out front. And people are all the way out to the road, about 20 feet out to the road from the building. They're on the side of the building. They're over here in front of the building. They're everywhere wanting to hear the gospel preached. Then again, you're out in the sticks. And they wanted to hear the gospel preached. And so they came from all around. This is the desire that is present in the Philippines, that astounds me. We have a hard enough time getting our own members to come to our own gospel meetings. And these are coming from all around, all over the area, to hear the gospel preached. I can't tell you the countless numbers of emails that I get daily from gospel preachers over in the Philippines. They send a report. It's almost daily that some of them send a report. Others are weekly. They want to communicate. They want to hear what you have to say. They want to know and understand the gospel of Jesus Christ. They want you to know that the gospel is powerful and it's working in the Philippines. And time and time again, I saw proof of it. Here, too, were to be baptized into Jesus Christ here at Bumatog. I don't know why I put this. These little piggies are going to market here. They're this guy right here. This, generally, what I do is a picture like this. This is my breaking point. This is my halfway point, where I get a morning sermon and an evening sermon. This is my halfway point. So generally, we're about halfway here. So just hold on. We'll get through the rest of it. But this little piggy right here, he was standing up on all fours, and he was looking around for a little while there. And then he laid back down, and he snuggled next to this other one here. They were going to market. I don't think they were going to be coming home. From Loog, we went down to the Marcos area. Then from Loog, we went down to Sinayat, and then over to Nueva Era the next day. Sinayat is about an hour and a half drive from Loog down here, and this is actually where Matt Sabine Sr. lives, and he preaches here, but he also preaches up in Loog. So he preaches in Sinayat in the morning, in Loog in the afternoon, Loog in the morning, Sinayat in the afternoon, does all this driving. He lives here, this is Matt Sabine Sr. One came forward to be baptized here. How old do you think she is? You know, I when I first went over there, I would say, well, she's probably 8 or 9 years old. No, she's 12. Her friend here is 14. I quit trying to figure out ages over there. The people, they just look so young. Or they look much younger than they are. And so I quit trying to figure out ages here. She was baptized. She came forward to be baptized. She was baptized in the ocean and learned another new trick. How do you baptize in the ocean? Baptize with the wave. As the wave is coming in, you've got extra water there, you baptize with the wave, and the wave covers them up. Use nature as God intended, I guess. Wonderful that she was obedient to the gospel of Jesus Christ. In the afternoon, we went to Nueva Era Church of Christ. And again, here, you've got a cinder block building here. There's just curtains here, but there's no glass in the windows. And again, you have people in front, you have people on the side over here, you have people on the other side over here. The building is just packed and loaded as they're wanting to hear the gospel preached, as they came from all over the area. These are just some of the preachers, some of the men who went along with us. I spoke earlier of a man named Vic Domingo. This is Vic Domingo here. He and Matt Sabine Jr. Sr. have been instrumental in the spread of the gospel in the Ilocos area. As the gospel has been preached, they have continued to stand for the truth in the face of all troubles, in the face of all trials, and they have encouraged brethren, and the church has spread and grown all in the Ilocos area, where, it, like I said earlier, it is the number one religious group. It's the most populous religious group in that area. Please forgive me for using that phrase, the number one religious group. There are more members of the church than anything else in the Ilocos area. It's due to the work of Christians as they preach and teach the gospel. It can be done. We can preach and teach the gospel of Jesus Christ. We can do it. We may doubt ourselves at times, but we can do it if we will get out and use God's word. We fumble and we say, oh, I don't have the words. Oh, I can't say this. Oh, I can't do that. Well, you know what? I don't have to speak. I have to know what God says, and I open it up, and I just let God do the speaking. When it comes to baptism, I let God do the speaking. When it comes to worship service, I let God do the speaking. When it comes to marriage and divorce and remarriage, I let God do the speaking. But we have to know, we have to be familiar with His Word. The Word will spread. It will do exactly what God in Isaiah 55, what is it, verses 10, 11, 8, 9, 10, 11, it will do exactly what God intended it to do. It will not return to Him void if we preach and teach the gospel of Jesus Christ. Let's see. Oh, let's just go forward here. We were at Lowell. We went down one day. We went down to the Marcos area. The next day, we went down to Sinai, and then back up to Nueva Era. And then the next day, we came back up here to Pagaput. Pagaput is a congregation that we passed on the way to Loog. We came back up here about another hour and a half back up here to Pagaput, where we taught in the morning. And this building is built right into the side of the jungle here. They cleared a little area here, and they built it right into the side of the jungle here. People came from all over. We have a number here to be baptized. This boy right here, he's 11 years old on the end. Matt Sabine, the senior, he asked how old he was, and he said he was 11. And then we have these to be baptized, six to be baptized here. Again, the building was full. On the sides and out the front, the building was full. In the afternoon, this is the day here that Matt Sabine, we were supposed to go up here to Pagaput and preach in two areas, and as we're driving up there, Matt says, oh, by the way, we're preaching in three areas today. Oh, great, how are we going to do that? Well, we'll figure it out. And that's what you do. You just figure it out. And so we went to Pagaput in the morning. In the afternoon, we went to the Yo-Yo Church of Christ, about a 45 minute to an hour drive away. We went to the Pagaput Church of Christ, and this is about 9 feet across by about 25 feet long. A concrete building here, tin roof. People were on the side out front again, numerous people. And a couple came forward. We believe that they are husband and wife. She's pregnant, but we believe that they were the husband and wife couple who came forward. And they were to be baptized. At this particular, what we did on this one is Matt Sabine Sr., he said, one of you can preach in the afternoon, one can preach here and one can preach there. And we were going to flip a coin, and Matt said, now there's no electricity at the first one, so you'll have to use a chalkboard. And I said, Harry, you're preaching here, I'll preach at the next one. So I had a PowerPoint at the next one waiting for me. So I let Harry preach with the chalkboard here, and two came forward to be baptized here. They found a spot in the river. They found a spot deep enough in the river where those from the morning lessons from in Pagaput and then from a Yo-Yo, they were baptized here. And these are the ones that were baptized in front, minus the little child here, and all of the preachers from the area who were present. At the Naxos Burgos Church of Christ, one came forward to be baptized. This is where I preached in the afternoon. One came forward to be baptized here. We were not able to stay and witness the baptism here. It was getting late in the day. And no matter what, you don't want to be on the freeway, the highways, when it starts to get night. They're just not safe. We went through several checkpoints along the way. One checkpoint we went through, the guards were there with M16s. And they were checking as you went through. They would let the vans go through. We were in a van. They would let us go through. They were stopping every motorcycle because the motorcycles were the ones who reported to have bandits on them, so because they could get away quickly on a motorcycle. And so they were stopping every motorcycle along the way. He would see pistol grip shotguns. and armed officers and M16s all over the place. It's just a normal sight, a normal everyday sight that you would see in the Philippines. And so you have to be careful. And so we had to make sure that we got back to the hotel in time. Nighttime over there comes very, very quickly. By 6 o'clock, it's dark over there. It's something to do with, Harry said, it's something to do with being so close to the equator. I'll take Harry's word for it. But by 6 o'clock, it was dark over there. And so you didn't want to be out on the roads at night. You wanted to go ahead and get to where you're going. The fourth day that we were there, we stayed in Loag itself, in the city of Loag itself. And we taught at the Church of Christ in Loag City. This is where Matt Sabayan, one of the other congregations where Matt Sabayan preaches. This is a three-story congregation. They have a women's class on the first floor, men's class on the third floor. They have a assembly hall on the second floor. One of the largest congregations here in the area. And Harry and I were preaching. This is a family right here. This family followed us all over the Loag area, all over the Ilocos area, as we were preaching the gospel all 4 days. This woman right here, just a strength, she has leukemia, and yet she followed us everywhere we went. Everywhere we went. And, you know, it's little things like that that are so encouraging. I can put aside my illness. I can put aside my weakness. I can put aside my chance of losing my life through leukemia, and there's a good chance she's going to lose her life through leukemia over in the Philippines because there's not the same care that we have here. Now, there might be some things that will happen, but she puts all that aside to come and hear the gospel preached. Oh, you know, my head's kind of hurting me this evening. Now, I'm not dismissing migraines or anything like that. I don't want you to think that I have a little bit of a headache tonight. Oh, you know, my ankle kind of hurts tonight. I don't know if I can walk into the building. I better just stay home tonight. You know how many times I've heard that? Oh, I have a headache, so I can't come to worship services. How many times have you heard that? How many times have you made that excuse yourself? Let me ask you this. Was your headache any better at home than it would be here worshiping? Let me ask you this. Is your headache any worse than this woman's leukemia? To get to Loag City, she had to travel at least 2 hours one way. Yet she was there. Next time you have a headache, next time your knee kind of hurts, think of that woman right there. Think of her. Won't you do that? We preached in Loag, and after we went from Loag, we got on a bus and we traveled to San Fernando. And I don't ever want to take a bus trip ever again in my whole entire life. Oh, it was just horrid. Oh, it was just the worst. The buses there are made for Filipinos. Now, this bus we had was a wonderful bus, lots of legroom. Seats were wide apart, lots of legroom. The only problem is it's made for Filipinos. And so what I mean is it's made for Filipinos. As I sat down, and I went, where is the back of this seat? It's not there. Because it came to about here on me. And so in order to get comfortable, I had to lay the seat all the way out and stretch all the way out. And I'm laying down, I'm planking, to those who know what planking is. I'm planking on the bus here, trying to get comfortable for a 6-hour trip from Loag all the way down to San Fernando. Oh, it was horrid. Oh, I don't ever want to take the bus again. And I knew in my mind that we're going to take another bus trip. I already knew in my mind that we're taking another 5-hour bus trip. And it's going to come up, and it's just going to be horrible. It's just going to be horrible. We met at the Church of Christ in Cabo La Union, and this building is under construction. This building dwarfs the building at Escoto, and it's still under construction. They're under construction. Their building. We met at the building. Lordy Solunga came with us. When we got to Gigarao, Lordy joined us. And Lordy lives down close to the old Park Air Force Base in the Philippines.
And he is just an encouragement, a strength and encouragement to all the brethren around. He'll travel at a moment's notice. His family is very supportive of him. And Harry asked if he would travel with us, and Lordy traveled with us. He did some of the translating back and forth. The translating was very good because we got down to a kind of a banter back and forth. I don't know what I'm going to say, and then the translator would say, and he would finish up his translation. I wouldn't understand, know when he was finishing his translation, and I would pick right back up, and we would just bounce back and forth, and it got a flow towards the end of it where we were able to go back and forth quite easily. But Lordy is here translating, summarizing the lessons that we were giving here today. We could speak in English, and most of the people could understand, so there was just really a summarization that was needed here. Rhody was also with us. And he preached, and he did some summarization also. This man right here, Denver Domingo, no relation to Vic Domingo that we spoke of earlier. Denver Domingo, young man, he is under tremendous pressure and tremendous strain right now at the church here in Cabo Union. There are some issues that are going on that he has taken a stand for, and he's having to take a stand against his family, his father, specifically his father. And that's unheard of in the Philippines. You do not speak against your parents, your father, your mother. You just do not do that. And Denver Domingo is doing that very thing because his father is, he has repented of his sins, and hopefully he'll maintain, but he has unfortunately, he has a reputation that is going to follow him for a while. Keep Denver Domingo in your prayers as he stands for the truth, as he stands for the things of the gospel of Jesus Christ in the Cabo Union area. From San Fernando, Rhody in his chariot drove us down to Urdaneta, and we met with brethren there. Some of the brethren who were at Cabo Union drove all the way down, 2.5-3 hour drive. They drove down and they met us at Urdaneta. We met at the congregation here, and again, the building was packed out front on the sides. Harry was preaching, and I gave a short lesson here in the afternoon. From Urdaneta, we had to catch a bus all the way that takes down to Manila, down to Manila. And the way you caught the bus was you drove by all the buses on the road and you looked at the sign and you saw where the sign was going. And if the sign said what you wanted, we were looking for a sign that said Pasay, P-A-S-A-Y. And as soon as we saw that, Tessie's rolling down the window and she said, "Do you have room for three?" She's yelling out the window, "Do you have room for three?" And the bus driver stopped. The bus driver shakes his head. So we pull over in front of the bus, make the bus stop. We get out. It's kind of like a little bit of a fire drill that we would pull as kids. And as we're running around the vehicle, we make the bus stop. We get our luggage from the top, from the back of Rhody's truck, into the bus. And we run and get on the bus. And that's how we caught the bus from Urdaneta down to Manila. We made this transfer in about a minute and a half. Six bags. Three men as we got on this bus here for the travel from Urdaneta to Manila. About another 5 hour drive. This one, Harry is the ever present worker. He's typing on his computer so he can get his report ready to sit out on his blog just the minute we get to an internet connection. This one has a headrest, but it has no leg room. I'm sitting down, and I have my headrest where I can lean back, and y'all can't see me over there well. You're tougher. The seat was literally about an inch in front of my knees, and so I could move my feet about this far, and I'm out of leg room. Oh, it's just... So you either get no leg room and a headrest, or you get leg room and no headrest. You flip in which corner you want, or which kind of bus you want to ride on. We went to Sunday morning, the last Sunday we were there, we went to the Kapibahayan Church of Christ in the Philippines. Now, the Kapibahayan Church of Christ in the Philippines is in the very, very poorest area of Manila. To say it's a tenement area is to be saying the very best about it. But you do not dare say that because this is where they live. This is their home. You would be talking to them about their home. This is the way they grew up. This is the way they live. This is what they know each and every day. I guarantee you it's not somewhere where any of us would want to live. Not a single one of us would want to live there. But this is one of the biggest and strongest churches that I've ever seen. We were at the congregation in Cebu. Cebu is a very affluent area. I witnessed their contribution on Sunday morning, and they had a large contribution. This one over twice as much in the poorest area of Manila. Over twice as much contribution. You can't look at something and judge something by the area. You can't look at the hearts of the individual Christians and make a judgment because of where they live. And oftentimes we might do that. Make a judgment by the way you're dressed. By the way you speak. Oh, you got that twang. You must be from West Texas. Make a judgment about people. No, let's look at the work that they do. Let's look at the strength of Christian character that they have. One of the things about Kappa Behind Church of Christ, what time do y'all meet on Sunday morning? You meet at 10:30?
9:30 class.
9:30 class, 10:30 worship. Boy, y'all are burnt, wasting daylight. They meet at 7:30 on Sunday morning. We had to leave the hotel at 6:30 in the morning to get there by 7:30. By 10:30 in the morning, they're already out busy with their day, working and doing everything. Sunday's generally just almost a regular day. They meet at 7:30 in the morning. Okay, elders, let's just change to 7:30. How many people do you think we'll have here with us on 7:30 on Sunday morning? Again, it's what you desire, it's what you want. If that's when we meet, would you be here? Would you be here on Sunday morning? We preached, and again, this is a two-story, meeting down here. Within the new women would meet for a class, and the men would meet for the class upstairs. Various preaching. Again, this is one of the poorest areas. This is a river here that you wouldn't even want to stick your hand in. You wouldn't want to stick your hand in. Jerry and Teresa Torja, this is the doctor that Harry called. This, if you're sick in the Philippines, this is the doctor who you call. She's a medical doctor, and she was the one who over the phone helped Harry, told him what to do and where to go as far as the hospital and what to ask for. Wonderful, wonderful couple, wonderful, wonderful family as they stand for the truth of the gospel, even in the most dire circumstances that you and I would probably never want to live in. That afternoon, our last stop of the whole trip was we went to the prison in Muntinlupa. Muntinlupa, we went and visited Willie Odie Pastor. Willie Odie Pastor, he is in prison for murder. He killed a man. The man he killed he killed him in self-defense. But because the man who was killed has political connections, instead of being let off because it was in self-defense, he's now serving a prison sentence. He's about 5 years into his prison sentence. He'll be in prison for probably another 4 years unless he is able to receive a pardon. And there's a pardon on the president's desk right now that includes Willie's name and a number of other people, but it includes Willie's name that he might get pardoned very soon. The pardons are all kind of put on hold right now because there is there's an impeachment that's going on in the Philippines of the Chief Justice of their Supreme Court, and that's kind of sucking up all the political energy, all the political thought, and so any pardons are kind of being put off right now. But we got to meet with Willie Odie Pastor and his wife Kathy. Kathy gets to spend some time with him every couple of months. She'll spend 2 days and one night with him there in the prison. And a Filipino prison, any prison, is nowhere that you would want to go. And a Filipino prison is nowhere that you would want to be. Willie is an orderly. He has some privileges that others do not have, but he's still in prison. He lives in a room that is probably 20 by 20, and 38 other men live with him in this one room. The cubicle that he has where he sleeps is probably And it's add another 10 inches wide, and that's where he sleeps. That's his cubicle where he sleeps. When Kathy gets to come and see him, that's where she would sleep also, as she gets to spend some time with her husband while he's in prison. He's been in prison probably 5 or 6 years now. What Willie has done is he has preached the gospel. While he's in prison, Willie has preached the gospel. You know how many people have been baptized while Willie's been preaching the gospel? Over 70. In prison, over 70 men have obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ. I got to meet a handful of them. I got to shake their hands, brothers and sisters in Christ, in prison, in the Philippines, because one man taught the gospel of Jesus Christ. Kind of like Paul and Silas. What were Paul and Silas doing? Praying and singing hymns. The earthquake happened, the Philippian jailer, Acts chapter 16, the Philippian jailer was worried that all the prisoners had escaped. They called out to him, do yourself no harm. He's about to kill himself, do yourself no harm. And he came in and said, sir, what must I do to be saved? And they taught the gospel of Jesus Christ. And that night, he and his family were baptized. Paraphrasing the story of the Philippian jailer. You see, that's what Willie's done in prison. In prison, he's done that. How many of us are in prison? Go ahead and raise your hand if you're in prison. Anybody? Nope. Nobody in prison? Nope. Are we teaching the gospel of Jesus Christ? How many people do you know need the gospel of Jesus Christ? I know Willie has a captive audience. Please forgive me the pun. But are we teaching the gospel of Jesus Christ? You know, Willie's done something. Willie has done the saying that we use kind of offhandedly here in the United States. He's done it. Remember the saying that we had? When you have lemons, what do? Make lemonade? That's exactly what Willie's done. He's given lemons, and he made lemonade. He made the best of the worst possible situation that anybody could be put into. And he's made the best of it. He could have given up. He could have quit. He could have said, no, I don't have time for this. I've got to worry about being in prison. But yet he taught the gospel of Jesus Christ. Prisoners were obedient to the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when he is released, there will still be Christians, even in the prisons. They will be teaching with him or without him. They will still be teaching. Why? Because the gospel of Jesus Christ has the power to change lives. It's not the power that's within me or within Stan or within Dennis or within anybody else. The power is within God's word. What did Paul say in Romans chapter 1 and verse 16? For I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ. For it is God's power of salvation. It's God's power of salvation. To the Jew first and also to the Greek. That's where the power is. It's not in me. What is in me is what should be in me, in each and every one of us, is the desire to preach and teach the gospel to those who are outside the body of Christ. We shouldn't have to wait for the worst of situations to come upon us to preach and teach the gospel of Jesus Christ. We have such privileges and such blessings here in this country that we ought to take advantage of them. I've seen people over in the Philippines who take advantage of the worst possible situations, things that we wouldn't even dream of. And yet they live it each and every day. Preaching and teaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. Can we do it here? I think we can. I think we can. I think we can take the gospel to those who are outside, those who need it. I think we can teach others. I think we do have the ability. I think we hamstring ourselves and hem and haw ourselves out of doing it. But I think each and every one of us has the opportunity, has the ability to do this and the opportunity.
Let's take advantage of those opportunities that we have. Let's take the lemons and make lemonade. Let's preach the gospel. Let's teach the gospel to those who are outside. Let's spread the gospel of Jesus Christ as intended, only according to His Word. Can we do that? I think we can. We need to teach those who are outside the body of Jesus Christ that they need to be baptized for the forgiveness of their sins. That's what baptism is. It's one of the things that baptism does. We're forgiven of our sins and then we're added to His body. If you're here this evening and you have not been baptized into Jesus Christ, give me examples and show me examples of the power of God's Word at work. You know you need to be baptized into Jesus Christ. Everything is ready. Don't wait. Be baptized. If you're here this evening and you recognize some weakness in your life, some point of strain, some point of change that needs to happen, won't you make the changes? You know what you need to do. We'll encourage you to do it. Repent. Go to God in prayer. Make your life right with God. If you need the prayers and the strength of the congregation, come forward that we might pray with you and pray for you. Encourage you as you encourage us. That's Jesus' call. That's His gospel call. Won't you be obedient to that? Won't you heed His gospel? Won't you heed His invitation? Won't you come forward as we stand and sing?